And Ethan will come for us all.
Hey Samantha, where can they find us on the social medias?
I am so glad you asked. They can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Reaper Tales Podcast and on TikTok at reaper.tales.podc. Just P-O-D-C.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can email us at reapergals@reapertales.com. I'm always looking at it. So if you're one of the ones that emails me on a regular basis, you know that. I do respond almost in real time. Unless like
almost.
I'm on vacation or like I'm bed rotting, but that's a different thing. So email us at reapergals, G-A-L-S, at reapertales.com. Email me to tell me that I look pretty. Email me to tell me I'm doing a good job and to send us your show suggestions and anything else that you want us to cover or anything like that. So, yeah.
And please remember to like, rate, review, subscribe, all the things you lovely listeners know what to do anyway on any of the listening platforms that you use. As per usual, you get bonus points if you do it on platforms you don't listen to us on, but you give us a nice little review. And worded reviews will get special shout outs. So if you are so inclined to do so, please do us a favor. Makes it a little easier for people to find us. And if you don't want to be listed out, by the way, on the worded reviews, it's too bad. We're still going to give you a shout out.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if even if you say we smell like boogers or something like that. Okay, thanks.
Rude.
Hello, I'm Montana.
And I'm Samantha.
And you're listening to
Reaper Tales. And today I am going to tell Montana about the legendary Miss Molly Teal. But before we get started, Montana, what are we drinking?
We're drinking margaritas. Happy Cinco de Mayo to everybody.
And now you're actually drinking one.
I am actually drinking one. I was drinking coffee earlier. Mine's a little bit different, obviously. You know, make your margarita however you feel. And I did.
Sounds good to me. Cheers, ladies.
Cheers.
Glass
bingo bango.
Clinking a little bit just for you. All right. So are you ready to hear about Miss Molly Teal? This will be a little bit of a shorter episode, but I really wanted to cover this one since I covered, you'll see why, but since I covered, shoot, from Birmingham.
Lou Wooster?
Yeah, Lou Wooster. That's it. Since I covered Miss Lou, I'm going to cover Miss Molly, and you'll see why I associated the two together. But let's go ahead and get started. So, born August 20th, 1852, to Mary A. Smith, father unknown, Miss Molly Teal was undoubtedly Huntsville's most successful and popular entrepreneur and madam. Over the years, Miss Teal worked hard to build her business and eventually became the quote, operator of the largest and most successful bordello in town, according to Old Huntsville, January 2005 edition.
What's a bordello?
So that is another term for...
It's a place of ill repute.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. I was trying to find a way of saying it. That was very similar to Miss Lou's place that she had in Birmingham. It was a place that women had a place to live and then also earn a living. A safe place to live, I should say, relatively. So there are no known pictures of Miss Teal. Though it was reported that at one time there was a painted portrait of her that hung in the house, but has since been lost. There were some reports that a wealthy person in the city of Huntsville purchased it and then put it in their own home, possibly passed it down through the generations. And they have the person who has it now doesn't even know who the person is in the portrait.
It's probably like some dude back then probably bought it as like wink bait. And now his like great grandchildren have it prominently posted in their dining room.
I would not be surprised.
Sorry,
I mean, think about how many of those types of portraits actually, like, because if you go to the Birmingham Museum of Art, you see all these portraits of women and men, and it says like artist unknown or the person is unknown. How often was that the kind of thing? Like,
I'm so sorry that I said
I wanted to have I wanted to have a portrait of my mistress painted and have it in my room and then didn't tell anybody and just left it to their kids or grandkids and they have it and they don't even know who it is.
I'm not even thinking about like prominent dude. Like when I think about that, I'm thinking about a prominent dude having a setup in his closet, like Helga from Hey Arnold, where she made Arnold's likeness from
wow,
gum.
That was a that was,
that's what I imagine that was like.
An altar?
I'm sure it wasn't.
I don't think that's what it was. That would have been after Miss Teal had been passed anyway, that this would have been purchased. So, but I mean, she was supposed to be attractive, so I don't know. Well, anyway, not much is known about her early life before she moved to Huntsville, though there was a mention in a newspaper of a M. Teal in Memphis that was arrested for prostitution shortly before her arrival in Huntsville. Her mother died at the age of 48 in April of 1872 when Molly was just 19 years old. Her mother is buried alongside Molly in Maple Hill Cemetery, which we've already covered, which makes most believe she may have moved to Huntsville to be with her daughter at some point and then passed. What is known is that in 1893, Molly purchased a large, spacious, Victorian-style 10-room and 2-story house at the present-day corner of St. Clair and Gallatin Streets for $300 and started her business. 10 rooms, 2 stories for $300.
Where was this at again?
Huntsville.
Okay. My goodness. I've been in a house that is that old with that many rooms. And one thing that they lack is the amount of bathrooms necessary for a place that big.
How many bathrooms? Funny you would mention that too. I don't actually put it in here, but I wondered if you were going to mention it. At the time, they did not have indoor plumbing, so bathrooms were not a thing. However, when she died, she did something with the house that I'll get into, but the house actually had one indoor bathroom with indoor plumbing.
Really?
Which was outrageous. Nobody had that. That was a luxury that was unheard of at that time.
Yeah.
So when she died, at some point before that, she had had work done in the house to where she would have an indoor toilet.
This is going to sound really insane, but during Hurricane Katrina, I stayed in that house that I was talking about, and they had two bathrooms that were obvious. Yeah, they were added on, obviously, after the construction of the home, because the first one was like right off the kitchen where it used to be a porch. It was a cloth.
Yeah, you'll see that a lot.
An older one. And since there was no power, we boiled water and put it in the bathtub. I felt like I was a Victorian princess. Honestly.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
It was the worst of times. It was the best of times.
Actually, come to think about it, when we stayed in New Orleans, the house that we stayed in, which was an Airbnb, the only bathroom on, it looked like it was a duplex, so it was the only bathroom on that side of the house, but the only bathroom and the laundry room were on one side of the house past the kitchen. So you could tell, because it also, I think it had a little bit of like you had to step down, you could tell it was an addition. And that house was a historic house. That was one of the things when we booked the Airbnb, you have to be aware this is a historical house, so you have to be careful about da 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 da.
Or they closed in a portion of the courtyard. Yeah.
Yeah. You can tell it was an addition because the back porch was, it led to the back porch. So it's funny you should say that because that actually made me remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It
that's interesting.
Brings me back to that. And I'm like, oh, that's when I lived my Victorian era. So
fainting on the couch. Apparently.
I did.
Because that's what they did.
I fainted because I was scared to death.
I'm sure.
It was Hurricane Katrina.
This house was described as resembling a boarding house with many rooms operating from a central hallway. So thinking like one central hallway, 5 rooms on either side you could access. No bathrooms. So literally like it was described as like a shotgun house. Everything went down the hallway.
Only the ceilings were like, what, 15 feet high?
Yeah, probably. I mean, if it's a Victorian style home, then yeah. And it's two stories. Yeah. So it was probably more like, you know, 5 rooms on one floor and 5 rooms on the other, or 6 on the bottom and 4 on the top, whatever.
I would say this house is exactly what I stayed in. Honestly, that's what it sounds like. But this house was in Verbena, not Huntsville.
I mean, it could have been built around the same time. That would be surprising at all. Not even 1 year later, she was able to get a mortgage on the same home for $1,900, which she later repaid in full.
Good for her.
So not even a year later, the value went up 600%.
Yeah, that's what we're living in right now.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. I didn't think about that.
We love a self-sufficient bitch, like snaps for
100%. And actually, from what I read, she did that multiple times. She would take a mortgage out on the home, which would be basically like a loan, because as we've already covered in previous a previous episode, it was very hard for women to own a business or to have their own business or own their own land or property. So lending to a woman was definitely unheard of. So she had collateral as a very nice home. She could mortgage it, take that as a loan, use that money to do improvements on the house, which is what she ended up doing over and over and over again. And then she would turn around and pay off the loan. Usually, obviously, faster than a mortgage because she didn't live all that long. But yeah, she did that over and over.
Which worked back then, does not work today.
No, you cannot do that today. That's not how that works. She was actually not the only madam in Huntsville at the time, but she was considered by many to be the most popular, and it was certainly the largest operation of its kind, with as many as 15 to 20 girls living and working there at a time. So that means...
Good for her.
2 per room, roughly.
Women supporting women.
Probably more than that, because one of the rooms had to have been hers, because she lived there, so...
Mm-hmm.
She also had a still in the backyard where she made and sold her own brew, which probably helped contribute to her success. This girl
of course
knew how
did.
To make some money. I knew you would like that part, Montana.
I love it. Because I'd love to say that I'd be a madam, but I wouldn't be. I would be one of those kids in overalls in the woods. Checking on the underground stills back then. That would have been me, unfortunately.
That sounds about right. Testing out the brew to make sure it's up to par.
Yes.
She was described as having, quote, a most attractive appearance and dressed in the latest fashion, end quote. The looks of the time were apparently, quote, wasp-waisted, heavy bosomed styles, leghorn sleeve dresses with bustles and perhaps trains. Now you know why I sent you the picture. Sometimes with a feather or fur boa around the neck. And then the costume would be completed by a large felt or straw hat, usually decorated with flowers or feathers and probably tilted at an angle. Which that was from the Old Huntsville article, January 2005 edition as well. And the tilted at an angle, every time I hear that, that's that idea of, I used to read old English novels, and if a man had his hat tilted at an angle, he was considered to be roguish. So more, not necessarily, it was typically like, not high fashion per se, but like they were in the upper levels of society, but maybe on the outskirts, because they probably did stuff that wasn't necessarily approved of. So I have a feeling that's probably why it was probably tilted at an angle.
It was like your womanizing uncle from your rich family, like the side of your rich family.
Yeah, probably. But I don't know what a side of a rich family looks like because I don't have
the same. Actually, I'm just thinking about
if I had one, that's what I would think. What I would think about.
Also, the other reason I wouldn't have been one of them, big like waspish waist and
wasp
big bosom,
waist.
Out.
Out. So, I mean, you can, but a wasp waist kind of describes it really well, right? Because a wasp has no waist whatsoever and big old top, big old bottom. And that's basically the idea. So the bustle on the back made your lower half look a little bigger. And then having some bosoms helped with the whole look that you were going for.
Didn't have the bosoms, but I wouldn't have had to have the big
padding. That was, by the way, my favorite old-timey style. My favorite. By all that I've ever seen. That's always the one that I liked. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but didn't a lot of them wear corsets to get that look?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and women would actually, their rib cage would be, had changed because they'd been wearing corsets their whole life, basically, even. So while they were developing, it would actually not deform, but kind of deform their rib cage in that silhouette, which sucked if the styles changed, but what else is new?
Yeah.
Right.
I would say my favorite style, if I had to pick, is going to be either the 1950s style flapper, not the 20s, the 50s. They're not exactly flappers, but it had a similar feel. And then all the sequins, short dresses, the pinned up hair, more like pinup.
Pinup and flapper are very different things because pinup is hourglass shape. Flapper is boyish shape. So straight up and down.
That kind of thing. Or the 80s punk rock style.
I can get behind that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm saying like old style, like between these crinoline with the really big skirts that they could barely sit down in. If we're comparing the really old styles, this was my favorite because I remember they had it in Anne of Green Gables and Anne of Avonlea when I was growing up. And I thought she was so beautiful and it always made me so mad that she hated her red hair. And I was like, why is she mad? She's beautiful. Yeah. Okay. There's a point there. It was slow to be absorbed. That was kind of the point of the whole thing.
I don't know. I would have navigated more towards pants, I guess.
Fair.
Big pants person.
No, I mean, dressing up, sure. Daily, I want pants and shorts. Good God, shorts in the South. Please, please give me shorts. It would have been hard to miss her, as she frequently enjoyed rides in the afternoon around town in her, quote, elegant black Victoria carriage, daintily holding a parasol at her shoulder, end quote.
Good for her.
There was even a report or two that she was in a 4th of July parade. This was so funny. She was in a 4th of July parade along with some of her girls. And by in it, I mean she just basically joined it. She wasn't invited.
You know what? Maybe I'm more like her.
And some of the women folk watched from the sidelines in horror as they realized that certain members of their families of the male variety seemed to recognize and know at least one of the ladies in the carriage. At least one. This was obviously not appreciated by many in the city. Sex work at the time was no more legal than it is now. Not that it mattered to Molly, who even paraded her girls in their fine attire throughout the streets of Huntsville, most likely as an advertisement for her fine business. And with the obvious makeup, there was little to no doubt that what the lady's profession was. But if there was any doubt, seeing Molly right there next to him was all the confirmation that anyone needed. So, hey.
So she was the popular one. She is.
Yeah. I mean, it sounded like everybody looked at her as she was gorgeous. She was the latest fashion. They wanted to be her, but they didn't want to be her. Or acknowledge that they wanted to be her. Let's be honest.
I mean, same.
According to the old Huntsville paper from January 2005, quote, like the residents of the town's other sporting houses, Molly's girls had regular medical checkups under a pragmatic system that privately regulated prostitution while publicly censoring it. Several times a year, the local police or sheriff would dutifully raid the bordellos. These shows of official outrage served to appease the segments of the community who spoke out against the operation of the bordellos, but they had other benefits as well. The raids also netted fees and fines and other legal charges for the city's coffers. In case you didn't know what a coffer was, it's a strong box in which money or valuable objects are kept. Kind of think the Disney cartoon for Robin Hood, where they have the box where they're collecting all of the taxes and they're putting all the money in it. That's kind of what they're talking about, like the bank account or treasury.
So what you're saying is that our government and the police force can be bought even back then.
Well, yeah. Surprise. Sorry, I didn't realize you didn't know that.
Oops.
In addition, the authorities were able to make sure that any girls that needed a health check would receive it before being released from jail. So if you think about it, this was a way that Molly, yes, paid them off and satisfied the general public and them, but also she could let the girls get arrested, but also have a health check while they were there, and then they could come back and she would know that they were okay. But it wasn't a forceful thing. If they wanted a health check while they were there, they could get it. It wasn't necessarily a requirement.
Oh, well, that's one thing they have up on us today. Bodily autonomy.
Well, I mean, that's what the way that it was relayed. I can't say I wasn't there, obviously, but that's the way that they made it sound, is that was an opportunity for them to get checked while they were there. I found that to be quite interesting, and it makes sense. The best way to control the spread of disease and illness is to make sure people who are serving the public had a, I imagine, mostly clean bill of health. I also have a funny feeling Miss Teal had an arrangement with the city that allowed this to happen for her benefit as well as theirs.
Oh, probably.
Just because it served both of them in general.
Well, she's putting a lot of money into the city as well as, like, making a lot of money and, like, opening businesses and, like, jobs and paying taxes. Was this before penicillin? It had to have been. 1930s?
Well, this would have been the late 1800s, like 1890s, somewhere around there. Because, like, she purchased...
When penicillin was...
Penicillin was invented in 1928.
There it is. Yeah, I was close to 1930. Yeah. So, I mean, you can still get checked out, but if you have something wrong with you...
Yeah, but if she knew that you had something wrong with you, she might not keep you in her house, because she had a reputation. So she had a reputation to uphold.
Fair enough.
The next section of that same article by Kay Cornelius is just really good. It's well written, so I just wanted to quote it. It said, quote, "One of the most often told stories about these sporadic raids concerns a time that Huntsville's volunteer fire department was called to fight a blaze in one of the local bawdy houses. The firemen quickly put out the fire before much damage had been done, but they made no haste to leave the scene, quote, lest the flames should erupt again. While the firemen were still on the premises, the police descended upon the house and in one of their routine raids and arrested them all. The volunteers then resigned their firefighting posts in protest, leaving the city without fire protection for, quote, a while," end quote.
Don't blame them.
Another article said the firemen were literally, quote, caught with their red suspenders down, end quote.
I don't know what it is about a firefighter. Like, nowadays, I'm not, like, about that life. But back in the day, like in my early 20s, late teens, I worked at a place, and it was in a shopping center where there was a gym and a grocery store and a Chinese food place. And every single day at 2:30, when I was working, a fire truck would pull in and these men would load out. They'd go to the gym, they'd come out and they'd be sweaty. They'd go to the grocery store, pick up whatever they were going to cook that night. And I just, like, the whole time just staring out the window. I worked with a bunch of old ladies and they were like, yeah, get used to it, it happens every day. I was like, oh man, I need a husband.
Yeah, because I was gonna solve that.
God, what was wrong with me
that we can't get in? Molly passed away September 24th, 1899, at the age of 47. It's not certain what the cause of death was, though it had been reported that she may have died from a long case of a chronic venereal disease. According to HuntsvilleHospitalFoundation.org, quote, "In another obituary appearing the following Sunday, October 1st, in the Daily Tribune, an individual identified only as M offered a personal tribute to the madam. Quote, Miss Molly Teal, the writer noted, was a loving daughter, a lovable girl, and not only a good woman, but an angel, whose many deeds of community charity included supporting the schools and the city volunteer fire department." Yes, she did.
Good for her. I mean, same. But no, I, in my head, I'm like, she probably didn't die of that, honestly, because if she's, like, doing all the business stuff, I highly doubt that she's doing, like, the, you know, wild thing constantly. tuberculosis sounds more like.
I feel like it may have been something along the lines of what happened with Lou. She was probably smoking. She was probably drinking. Those things, her own brew from the backyard, probably.
Oh,
so
yeah.
They lived a hard life. There's no way of getting around that. So, and health checks weren't what they were, what they should have been. They were what they were, and people who got sick in any real way, it was just your body either fought it or you were just out of luck. So, drinking and smoking definitely didn't help your body recover from that in any way, shape, or form.
And if you had like a venereal disease, it typically like targets your brain in a lot of ways. And she seemed kind of with it, right?
It seemed so, like it all the way up to the end.
That's why I'm like, probably TB, you know,
very possible. It was the trend at the time, I believe.
Very much so.
Only a year or so before she passed, Molly drafted her will, leaving all of her property to Molly Greenleaf. It's uncertain whether Molly Greenleaf was a friend, housekeeper, or a loyal servant. It wasn't specified. And she was to get everything, basically, after debts and funeral expenses were repaid, letting her have use of it until she passed. It was then to be left to the city of Huntsville to be used as a school or a city hospital, and that the furnishings were to be sold and the funds used towards buying a library for public use. She also stated that all of her remaining belongings were to be sold and the money donated to public schools as well. Greenleaf did not live long after Teal passed, some reports saying only a couple of years later. And once she passed, the title of the house passed to the city in 1904. No one knows for certain why Molly wanted to leave her estate to the city. Some say it was because she had a deathbed confession of a burdened conscience regarding all of the ruin she brought to the young men of Huntsville.
No.
But many others deny that she felt remorse regarding her profession and services that were provided by her employees. I don't think she... I personally doubt it. She was far too successful and open about her business to think for a moment she regretted or was remorseful for her business.
Exactly. There's nothing to be remorseful for anyway. I mean, yeah, of course, like the Catholic Church and all that stuff is going to put pressure.
Well, I mean, and at that time, it was definitely frowned upon. But she was way too successful. She was doing a damn thing and making some serious money. I don't think she regretted that.
I doubt that. I
think she was basically denied family because of everything, and nobody wanted to know anything about her. And so she didn't have anybody else to leave it to. So if she was going to leave it to anybody, she wanted to do it for altruistic reasons and give it back to the city that she had worked and been successful in. And she probably had kids. Let's be honest. There were probably women that were not women walking through that house and working for her. They were probably children. And she knew it. And she wanted to put that to use. Make my house a city hospital so that those that are sick have a place to go and they can get treated by somebody who knows what the hell they're doing. Or make it a school so the poor of this city have a place to go and they can learn and be educated and do something with their lives. I think that's all it was.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah.
I think either way, she obviously had a desire to do some good with whatever was left behind when she left this earth.
Well, and are we sure that's what she specifically said, what she was going to do? Or did the city actually just want to take
will?
Her for all she... Yeah.
No, we know. It is in her will.
For
that's
sure.
a public okay. record. And I'll tell you why in a second.
I was like, maybe the city just said that's what she said. Nope. So they could like take... Okay.
No, it's very well documented. Regardless, as would have to be expected after her death, all of a sudden, she had relatives who showed up and wanted the money. Surprise!
Assholes.
These people have never shown their face, I guarantee. And all of a sudden, they're coming out of the woodwork saying, hey, no. The city doesn't get her stuff. We do. We're her next of kin. Where you been this whole time? And I'm pretty sure she would have left it to you if she cared. No. The will was contested by, quote, John W. Smith et al., and et al. Meaning and others, meaning it was him along with other relatives contesting the will, who claimed to be Molly Teal's, quote, heirs at law and next of kin. According to the Old Huntsville article, quote, the Smiths claimed in Chancery Court that Molly Teal's bequest to the city of Huntsville was void because it should have been addressed to the mayor and aldermen of the city of Huntsville. When the plaintiffs, who were the Smiths, won their case, the defendants, the city of Huntsville, appealed, and the decision was reversed by the Alabama Supreme Court in a ruling made February 28, 1903. However, the Smiths made one more attempt to gain some benefit from Molly's estate by filing an application for rehearing. They argued that since the money in the bank was not specifically mentioned, it should not go to the city of Huntsville. They're trying to get their grubby little hands on whatever money they can, and they should not have been entitled to it, but doggone it. She didn't mention the cash in her bank account, so okay, sure.
I'm gonna yes and you on that one. Like, they kind of got a leg to stand on that one. If she didn't specifically state it, if it wasn't like my entire estate and my wealth, blah, 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 blah.
That's basically the only thing she didn't mention was the cash in her account. I don't think she had a lot.
Maybe.
To be perfectly honest.
If they're even her actual relatives.
Well, I mean, I guess they would have had to have proven that they were in some way, form, or fashion to be considered heirs.
In an opinion dated
July 9th, 1903, the Alabama Supreme Court rules that the heirs were entitled to the money in Molly Teal had on hand at the time of her death, which was deposited into two different banks in Huntsville. Presumably, the proceeds from the sale of her other personal property would, however, still be given to the city as Molly Teal had designated in her will. So they literally only got the cash that she had in the bank accounts, and that was it.
Yeah.
So, the city still got the house and property, but what were they going to do with it? She had asked that the house be used as a school, but the good people of Huntsville were not okay with their children learning all day in a house that had been used as a bordello.
Oh, God. Okay.
Nor would they accept it being made into a library, or even the proceeds from the sale of her belongings being used to buy books for said library, which I don't really understand that one, but whatever. However, she had also asked that the house be used as a city hospital. By the way, due to the language in her will, the house could not be sold and the city received the proceeds. It was stated that the city had to use the house for certain activities. So as such, they had to honor the request or they could not accept the property. If they hadn't used it for the purposes that she specifically stated, then the property would have gone to her heirs and they would have lost the case.
Yeah, which you can stipulate. Like, that's such a weird thing to me that you can stipulate.
It's a bad thing to do in your will. I can say this as a CFP now. You can set up properties in a trust that requires it to be used for a certain period of time, and then the remainder be given somewhere else.
Yeah, we had to deal with some stuff like that with my husband's stuff, but it's a weird thing to do.
It is. It's not often done that way for a good reason. It makes it very complicated.
It's either done because that person knows what the outcome would be if they just let it loose.
Mm-hmm.
Or to be vindictive, honestly.
Yeah, that's usually it. And I think for her, I don't know that she necessarily had any real knowledge to know one way or another. She just wanted to be specific on what she wanted her property to be used as. And I think that's all it boils down to. Because it doesn't say anything about her being very educated outside of the education she gained herself through her experiences as a businesswoman in the city. So I think that was just her saying, this is what I want my property to be used for. And if you don't want to use it for that, that's fine. You don't get anything.
She was pretty business.
New term.
She was pretty business savvy.
Language is being evolved all the time. That's a new word.
And we've been recording for like 4 hours at this point. I'm tired of talking. That's
very fair. Well, the thing is, the city was in dire need of a city hospital, and some doctors' wives and other women who were civic-minded had been advocating for a city hospital for years, and they had actually rented places to use as a city hospital, like leasing them out, and they had been working really hard to give a place for people who were sick and ill a place to go for a long time. So it's possible that Molly Till knew about that as well, and that might have been why she included that in her will.
Okay.
From HuntsvilleHospitalFoundation.org, quote, Molly Till had to have been aware of the community's struggle to establish an infirmary. According to newspaper accounts of the day and a 1985 history of medical practice in that area, in 1895, 4 years before Molly's death, 17 women from the community had privately rented a small cottage, talked to the city fathers into chipping in $6 of the $12.50 of monthly rent, so less than half, by the way, hired a skeleton staff of one nurse, an assistant, and a housekeeper, and proceeded to open a rudimentary infirmary. Within months of the little facility's opening, it was relocated to a slightly larger cottage. But while the infirmary ended its first year in the black through fees and donations of cash, foodstuff, linens, and such, it remained in cramped quarters by the time of the philanthropic madam's death. So it was something desperately needed. And I can't think she wasn't aware of that. And that's why she mentioned it as a possibility. So those in charge of the city had their answer to both problems, and the large house was remodeled and opened for use as the Huntsville City Infirmary in 1904 and became Huntsville's first official hospital. It also housed a school of nursing. Both the school and the hospital remained in operation until Huntsville Hospital opened in 1926, so for 22 years. It seems that while Molly may have left the property to the city, she didn't just simply leave. Quote, a woman who trained at the school of nursing in the building recalled that the front screen door would sometimes slam and hook itself shut, at which time it would jokingly be said that Miss Molly had locked the door and was checking in on the customers.
Good for her.
Which, yeah, I don't blame her. Just making sure you guys are doing what I told you to do.
I mean, that's one of the only times that as a person, if I came back as a ghost, I wouldn't mind re-entering my job.
Just to fuck with them.
We talked about it like on the train one, like the ghost train one, where it was like, could you imagine just like coming back as a ghost and you had to do your job over again? You just keep doing your job over again. Like just to be the leader of a madam's home, like I'd do that 100%.
Slamming the doors and locking them closed just to fuck with people. Yes. Unfortunately, after Huntsville Hospital opened, the infirmary was sold and became more and more dilapidated. It later became a cheap boarding house. One report stated it became a nightclub at some point and then, quote, eventually reverted to its original purpose, although not in the manner that Miss Molly would have tolerated or approved of in her day, before it eventually burned to the ground.
Oh, that's sad. I was going to say, is it still there?
So it, as far as I can tell, it's never been rebuilt. I think it's still just a lot, a vacant lot at this point.
Oh, that's sad.
The legacy of Molly Till still remains. It's thanks to her that many in the city received the care that they needed. Thankfully, her story has not been forgotten. And even today, if you go by her grave, you may see it decorated with fresh flowers left by someone who may have wanted to show Miss Molly a little gratitude for the legacy that she left behind. And that is the story of the legendary Miss Molly Till.
Oh, let's go put flowers on her grave.
I would love to. No, I would love to go to, because we said we wanted to go to that cemetery. So I would love to go by a couple of the people that I've covered, including her, and put some flowers on her grave. Maybe your mom's too, because they're right side by side.
Yeah, I say we do it. We should do that.
We can even swing on the swing sets at the little playground.
Well, when we remaster the episode or re-record it, let's do that.
Yeah, there we go. We can even record some sound bites of the squeaking swings.
Yuck. Don't like that. I still don't. I think I said the same thing when you said that.
Probably.
Oh, no. Well, good job. She sounds awesome. I feel like if she was alive today, I would try to date her.
You probably would. Not gonna lie.
Yeah. I love a powerful woman.
What's there not to love? I mean, height of fashion, apparently quite attractive and outspoken as all get out, it seems like, and knew who she was, wasn't ashamed of it, and for all intents and purposes, seemed like she made sure her girls felt the same way because she paraded them around in finery and the makeup and was like, hey, let's go ahead and just join this 4th of July parade so they can really see what they're missing. Like,
hell yeah.
Like, okay, girl.
I'm on board.
Yes.
You know what? I can't do something when I plan it. I think I'm more like her in that way. Like, I can't plan to be a part of something, but I will join and be a part of something I wasn't invited to.
That's fair.
In a heartbeat.
Makes perfect sense to me.
I think that's more in me, not the Cancer.
Yeah, that's definitely more Leo. That's definitely more Leo. Kept it short and sweet, but wanted to cover her. And honestly, it was a little too long for a joint. So hopefully it's long enough for our listeners and not too short. But
well, that's what you get.
You have her to thank for a city hospital, apparently, because she's the one that got it really up and running for 22 years. So,
well, and truly, like, you have her to thank for, like, the entire economy, I would say, of Huntsville, because Huntsville's not a small place. It is a bustling place now. And she helped boost that economy back when it was really important to start growing your city. So,
and I didn't mention it. I thought I had put it in there, but I didn't. There were more than one instances of her girls being married to the height of society.
Oh. So it was
and
like, it was
shocked
the early
quite
days
a few family
attendant.
Trees. Do what?
It was the early day flight attendant.
Sort of, yeah. Yeah. So there were quite a few of the wealthy families that their family trees were not happy when they found out because they married some of the girls. The girls would leave. There was a rotating door, obviously, but quite a few of them left because they ended up getting married to wealthy families. So this was, I mean, when you're thinking about this business, this was more like high-end escort service, kind of sounds like, than what you would normally think of at that time. Because, yeah, mm-hmm. some of them left to go on to other places, but quite a few married. So,
yeah.
She knew what she was doing. I'm telling you, she had a mind for business. It was obvious.
Before flight attendants come for us, I'm talking about the like 60s and 70s flight attendants that only got the job. They wanted to work in first class so that they could get a husband. Like, that is well known.
Work with the rich businessmen in
first
class.
Not today's flight attendants.
I mean, hey, if that's your goal,
yeah,
go for it, honey. I got nothing against you, but no
do
judgment.
Girl. Whatever you decide to do, I'm going to support you.
100%.
I'm here for it. As long as it's, you know, mostly legal safe. And it doesn't harm children. I'm here for it.
Be safe. For yourself, too.
Well, good job. That was great. I'm going to go make a corset.
Out of what? I'm a little bit afraid of the answer of that question.
Don't worry about it. Does it matter?
No, it doesn't.
You guys are going to start getting snaps at like 2 o'clock in the morning tomorrow, which is on par for. Like,
no, you're going to send screenshots of Amazon purchases of boning, and I'm going to be like, "Why? This was a joke. You weren't supposed to actually go through it." I know you have a sewing machine, but this might be outside of your wheelhouse, darling.
No, I'm fine. Everybody's going to hear this episode like well after we do our mental health one. I'm fine. I'm not medicated, but I have been keeping myself so busy that I am not like spending money.
This was an amazing show of restraint on your part, and I greatly appreciate it and applaud you because I know it was not easy. So good job.
It was not.
I agree. Good work.
Hey, all that therapy, it's really doing wonders for me, I guess. I don't know. Who knows? But great job. This was a great episode. I'm going to look through a bunch more of these pictures that you sent because it's like right up there. It's on the big screen. So all I see is these fancy dresses. And I'm like, I bet I can
They're
make
gorgeous.
That.
Yeah, you probably could. I have faith in you.
If I do, I'll do it.
The look on her face, that needs to be a clip. I have faith in you. No. All right.
Oh, man.
Then I guess we should end the episode. Happy Cinco de Mayo. I'm going to finish my margarita, and we're having tacos for dinner. So celebrate how you will.
Same. I'm having shrimp tacos. So
nice.
Happy Cinco de Mayo. We love you. We mean it.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
The Reaper will come for us all.